Today on the AV Podcast, I welcome Big Brother Curtis and DJ Chris Nice to the show as we have the discussion on the one-and-done life of the college basketball student-athlete. We break down the flawed aspects of the system, plus we discuss if All-American blue-chip players and historical black colleges and universities need to start getting together. It's food for thought. To listen to the podcast and read the blogs on a regular basis, make sure you subscribe and tune in to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. It's the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. Let's get it.
Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio.
With the start of college basketball underway, and the time that major schools are scheduling their teams like Marist so that they can beat up on and after their win total and blow them out, it just made me start thinking about this past year with regards to everything that's been happening with black communities. And when I look at the world of college sports in the U.S., especially with what happened with Ben Simmons at LSU and that documentary he came out with last month on HBO called One and Done, do you guys think it's the right time or the right climate for All-Americans or All-American recruiting class to head to a HBCU? So basically like a Howard, a Morgan State, a Grambling, a Bethune-Cookman. Considering the amount of power these major schools make from NCAA sports on a yearly basis, what if these blue chippers took their earning potential, combined it together, and shifted over to another school? So, Kurt, I'll start with you. What do you think?
That would be wonderful. It would be a great idea. It would be great for a collective group of All-Americans to do something like that. But there's a lot of hurdles, and the main hurdle is that these HSBC schools, their schedule is not strong enough to... It's just not strong enough for the NBA scouts to look at and say, okay, this number one player, he dropped 30, but he dropped 30 against who? Bethune, you're right? He dropped 30 on Howard. Like, their league schedule play is just not strong enough. So they're going to have to, in order to do that, they're going to have to schedule some really, really tough games, right? And so you're going to have to convince, like, the Dukes and the Kentuckys to actually play you guys. And that's the whole challenge. Until they can do that, because it's a strength of schedule,
right,
that's going to get them in the NCAA tournaments and so forth, and that's what's going to matter. Collectively, you can do it, but it's a strength of schedule that's going to matter. That's going to dictate how you go in the draft, because your numbers can be skewed playing in a smaller college, a smaller smaller league, right? And that's the big problem with that. But it's a great idea.
I've been saying for years I would love to see that. I would love to see a five, but in a black uniform. I think one way, I agree with what Curtis is saying. I think one way they can do it is if they would have to unify while they're in high school. Yeah. And kind of, I guess, send a hint to the university that they're going to be going to, so that they can schedule the games the following year, knowing that they're cut, like, this is the plan. I guess if there's a way to keep it like real quiet and have the school schedule some games against some big competition, mm-hmm. and then the five of them go over there, I think that would be absolutely amazing. I hope I live to see that. Don't know if I will, but that would be absolutely amazing.
And here's the thing, too. That's the most important thing, again, is the strength of schedule. Them playing at Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, the big boys in college basketball. But there's no way in hell that Duke is going to want to play a Howard University who has five blue-chip All-Americans on there, because they can't afford to lose to a Howard, right? And now they got potential to lose to a small market school, which diminishes their rankings and their standards come NCAA time, right? So it's just a hard fight. It's going to have to be – the only way that's going to happen on a daily is those blue chippers are going to have to commit to going to these black schools yearly, or they have to stay more than 1 year. It can't be like a one and done thing, because again, a one and done I'm not going to want to. I'm Krzyzewski. I'm not going to want to lose to Howard, right?
Right.
I'm not going to want to lose to, you know, to Bethune or whatever the other schools may be.
Right.
I just can't afford that.
But would you know? But would you know if it was done secretly? Like, that this is what I mean. If they were to plan it while they're in high school, and let the school know of their plans, so the school could schedule, let's say, for 2017, they schedule games against, you know, Duke and whatnot. Because Duke will be thinking, well, we'll schedule a game against them to just beat up on them and get our guys ready, not knowing that these five fives are coming there for that year. You understand what I mean? That's basically, to me, is one way they can do it. It would have to be kept quiet, but the five five guys get together and basically mess with the NCAA. They're forcing them to go to school for a year, so they can basically dictate, okay, you're going to force us to go to school for a year. We're going to go and help out a black U, and also we're going to shake things up a little.
But now you go. So now they do that, and they leave. That one and done, they leave. Now, like a Marist or let's just start, but like a Howard or a Grambling or whoever that school be, they've lost. They would have just lost the support of schedule, of being afforded the time to schedule like a Duke or something like that, or Duke or North Carolina, because a lot of these schools are, it's based on relationships between the coaches.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm Duke, I schedule Howard or Grambling, and now Howard comes with five blue chippers and I'm forced to play them and I lose. Guess what? I will never play you again. And now the other guys, the other big boys, I ain't going to trust you either. Right?
Mm-hmm.
You touched on that point about that situation, because didn't that, I remember you saying that back in college, that happened with you at Marist, when you had like Rick Smith and those guys there, and nobody wanted to play you guys.
Yeah, nobody wanted to play us. Nobody wanted to play us, because we came out from nowhere. Back then, this is like the 80s. Yes, I am that old. But this is like the 80s, and Coach McGarity, he went abroad and started recruiting abroad. He was like one of the first to do such. So he went and he got Rick Smith from Hall, and he got Meryl Pekarski from Yugoslavia, a seven-footer, Krajcevic from Hungary. He was 6'9". Rudy Bugarell, whose son now is playing for Utah Jazz. Rudy Gobert, his dad, again, he was a seven-footer from France. Myself from Canada, 6'7". John Kionic from Canada as well. We had five, six guys internationally, five guys deep internationally. And they had a hard time scheduling exhibition games. Syracuse didn't want to play us. A lot of teams didn't want to play us because we were just too big, right? We had 3 7-footers.
Yeah.
We were just too big, right? And two of them were legit NBA players. Rick being, he had almost a Hall of Fame career with Indiana, but Meryl Pekarski, he was a solid NBA player as well. He ended up not playing in the NBA, but again, nobody wanted to play us because of the strength of our team.
Right.
So they avoided playing us. The only time we can play a team, a big name team, was if we made it to the NCAA tournament.
Well, you know,
reputations are big, man. A lot of teams don't want to lose to small market teams.
Because
makes sense, though.
And I look at it in this way, just because of like, well, for example, I present the question just because, and I'll give you props, Chris, because you were the one that originally been, as you said, been mentioning this point for years. I just decided just to make a podcast out of it. Don't worry, I'm not going to give you the royalties for it. But the reason why, like, I kind of wanted to bring it up is just because observing just how more and more options are created around committing to schools now, right? Just in the last 10 years, you're starting to see certain players say, you know what? Instead of doing the one and done option where it's forcing me to go to college, maybe I'll go to China for a year. You know, maybe I'll think of this option or that option. So why should it matter where some of these blue chippers go if it doesn't affect their draft stock? And when I say, I'm not talking just the average freshman, of course, I'm talking the ones that are like top 10 lottery pick, especially like this year where there's at least 10 freshmen that are projected to all be in the lottery, you know, so like a Josh Jackson, a Malik Monk, a De'Aaron Fox, and these certain guys. So I think personally, like, for example, I think there could be a situation where a HBCU type of school ends up trying to be like a Gonzaga. Because Gonzaga started off, I mean, I know they had John Stockton back in the 80s, but I mean, outside of that, they did not make any noise for years until like the late 90s. when they made that run to the tournament, then all of a sudden every year they just started getting players and players. And now, even though they're technically listed as a small school, you know, they're a powerhouse pretty much now, right? So I think personally, number one, I would think that I think the big part of that of getting these All-Americans and everybody to commit would be the coaching, first of all. So somebody like a Shaka Smart or somebody from the NBA that has a lot of pull that maybe can start getting into these kids' ears right away. Like, I think Shaka Smart, I mean, I know he's at Texas, but that would be, I mean, somebody like him that's a legitimate coach and, you know, has done major recruiting. You know, if one of these schools, and that's the hard part, because a lot of these HBCUs, they're suffering financially, a lot of them. Not so much Howard, but I know a lot of these ones are you know, they're losing money. So
they can definitely use the attention.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Do you commit to somebody like that, trying to poach a big-name coach?
That would be great, but in the real world, it all comes down to finance.
Right.
Right. It all comes down to how deep your pockets are. And like you alluded to just now, they don't have deep pockets. So to attract a top-notch coach, whether it be an unknown ex-NBA player or whatnot, you're going to have to throw some money on the table. They don't have that, right? So it would have to be a coach who really wants to give back to that community of black colleges that really wants to just say, you know what, I'll take $150,000 to coach, right? Shaka Smart is what, demanding what, $2-3 million, right, to coach now? Like, his salary is astronomical. They can't afford him, right? And he's not going to lose in his career years, his best years of coaching. He's not going to lose that type of money
to make that sacrifice.
Yeah, he's not. It sounds nice, but it's in reality, these guys are not going to lose that type of money. It has to be somebody who's already established, who just wants to, you know what, just give back kind of thing, right? And that's going to be a hard sell to come by.
Like a Darryl Walker, because I know Darryl Walker is coaching Clark Atlanta, which is a D2 school. But then again, I probably shouldn't bring up his name because he was the one that thought T-Mac was going to be a bust. So he might not be the right guy. But, you know, I just find it interesting because, for example, Emmanuel Mudiay, you know, that's a player that, you know, obviously he's looking to be pretty much one of the faces of the franchises for the Denver Nuggets. But before he left to go play in China for a year, he was recruited by SMU. But in a situation, again, they got Larry Brown. So somebody like a Larry Brown he can get an All-American to come to that school. I think he got a couple that year before Mudiay changed his mind. But, you know, like a name like that, for example, I think a lot of it has to do with the coaching. And I think somebody like a Howard, because, you know, Howard isn't in that situation where financially I don't think they're suffering as much, if they're suffering at all even, because I think they're ranked one of the top 100 schools in the country, especially academically. So I think somebody like them can possibly make that leap, but I don't know.
Personally, I won't go after a blue chipper. I'll go after the next tier and have them stay 2-3 years and build your program.
Yeah.
Then you got in 2-3 years, you got solid players, solid seniors who are making noise now. You're not like, it's just too hard to get the blue chippers. So you go after the next tier, like the fifth ranked top point guard or the 10th ranked point guard. But in 2 years, he's going to be a beast. Right, and that's who I'll go after, you know, the 4-star player, right, or the 3-star player. They're not even getting 3-star players.
Yeah,
right. They're getting the 2-star players and whatnot, and the 1-star player. So technically, for the most part, they're getting 2-star players.
Yeah,
right. They're not even getting 3-star players. So if they can go and start getting 3 or 4-star players and keeping them there for, you know, for 3 years, 4 years. Then you're going to see their program getting better. Then they'll be able to play against better teams and show themselves, you know, make a good game out of the games that they do, exhibition games they do have the fortune to play. And then you might see, they might get a steady recruit of 4-star players, then a better coach, and then more money, and then some TV time. And I wouldn't go after the top players in the country.
But to play devil's advocate, I'll be a dreamer for a second. let's say you do go after the top, or you get the top five players in the country.
Like, say you get Ben Simmons.
For these guys to do this, right, they would basically have to be a group of young men that wants to make a difference and wants to shine a light to the black universities and colleges out there. So in that year that they're there, imagine what they would have to say. So just media-wise, they might shine so much light on that university that you never know who might follow in their footsteps, and therefore they might shake up the system. You understand what I mean? Because they might send that message that, you know what, we're here for a year. For this year, we're going to bring our talents to this type of school, and we're going to shine the light on this school. And they leave the following year. You never know. If one kid at a high level follows them, that's how it all starts. Because right now, I'm sure these kids don't even think about these black youths because of the reasons, you know, that you just mentioned. All those reasons you just mentioned. They want the media coverage. You know, they want the bigger schools because they have a better chance of going pro.
Right.
But you just wish somebody could come and shine a light on these black universities so that one day it builds up to the point where guys don't mind taking a chance on going to these schools for that 1 year. You know, and then it brings the media coverage now to the school that could shake that trio.
I think, too, you got to look at the outside factors as well, and that being the shoe companies. So these shoe companies are really deep in youth basketball,
yeah.
AAU basketball. So these top recruits, they're all sponsored. All these teams are sponsored by, you know, the top three, the Nikes, the Adidas, and the Armour.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the top recruit who's wearing my Adidas line, he's playing for the Adidas League, so forth, right? As an Adidas rep, I don't want you to go to a Howard. We don't sponsor Howard.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Howard is not on TV. Howard is not making me money. So for them to go there, there's so much outside pressure, money-wise, from the corporates and so forth. It's going to have to be a real conscious decision, a really, really big conscious decision by these young kids and their families. You know, because I tell you, just the sneaker deal alone, there's so much money with the Under Armour League, the Adidas League, the Nike League. There's so much money for these, like, that's put in front of these young kids. And with that being said, a lot of the times the Nike League, they're pushing these kids to go to the schools that are sponsored by Nike.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not Grambling or Howard or whatnot.
Right. And I mentioned Moutier's name, but I mean, Moutier's a big name, and he was obviously when he was in high school. But again, just to be hypothetical here, the name I throw out once again is somebody like a Ben Simmons, because we all saw what happened with him last year at LSU. College, he didn't want to go to school, you know, obviously. He basically, his grades were so low and his attendance was so low at school that he basically didn't even qualify for the Wooden Award, something he probably would have won easily, you know what I mean, had he been eligible, academically eligible to be in something like that. So for had he gone to class. Now for somebody like him, I think it would take somebody like of that caliber to kind of go there and bring other players along with him, just because I don't think him going to an HBCU, I don't even think at this stage it would even hurt his stock. You know what I mean? Like, Kurt, do you think it would actually hurt his stock if he went to a Howard or a FAMU or something like that? Like, just because that guy's so talented, I think it didn't matter where he played. I think if he went to China, if he went to Switzerland, you know what I mean? Yep. If he went to Italy, I was going to say if he played in a CIS school, I don't think it would have mattered, honestly.
I think it would have, though. Because, again, if he goes to, number one, if he goes to a Howard or a Grambling and he doesn't have the teammates to support his talent, he doesn't look as good, right?
Right.
And that's number one. So, number two is, again, he can drop 30, but I'm dropping 30 against a Grambling or against a Howard. The competition in those leagues, they're not that good.
Right.
So you dropping 30... 35, big deal. It doesn't mean a thing. You haven't shown me as a scout that you're capable of playing. You're not playing against men, regardless, but you're capable of playing against elite talent.
So he'll get drafted, but he's just not going one.
They're not going to go one.
Yeah.
Right? And so as a kid, are you going to want to lose that up to lose that chance? So if you are going to make that move, it better be with a group of kids that can support your talent.
Right.
You can't be a one guy, one man show.
You're gonna look like
crap.
Well, that's it. That's why I mentioned that theory that he almost be like a Robin Hood and just bring other like blue chipper recruits, 4-star recruits, 5-star recruits to go with him.
Hey, well, they say everything starts with a dream, right?
Yeah. It's a wonderful thing and wonderful idea, and I think it would be great to finally see, you know, one of those schools actually have recruiting power and can get some blue chippers. But man, it's just so hard. You're going from recruiting 2 chippers to 5-star players. It's a dream though, but it's a nice stretch.
It's tough too, because I think also just the general backlash of somebody like, okay, for example, somebody like Malik Monk, just reading his story. He's from Arkansas, and this kid is supposed to be the next, as far as John Calipari put it, he's supposed to be the most athletic guard that he's had basically since Derrick Rose. And if you see some of the highlights, the guy's a complete stud. And yeah. Now he decided to go to Kentucky instead of staying at Arkansas, and the kid got destroyed. Right. And this is just to go to this is just him leaving the state. Right, to go to another school. Now imagine if he did that and decided again to go to Morgan State, you know, like so. Uh-huh. So I think media wise, and I think that's why you can't, as we just said before, you can't do it alone, because I think you're gonna get completely bombarded with questions, with backlash, and different people just coming after you on a regular basis because you decided to take a new route basically on and try to build something that's not part of the powerhouse schools.
So basically he lost in his state, he lost their money.
Right.
In a nutshell.
Right. And it wasn't a power, right? So like how does that's what I mean. So it's like I don't think it can just be, if something like that was to happen, I don't think it can just be just like the one guy. Like It has to be almost like a Fab Five, like Chris Webber, yeah, them, or like Joakim Noah and Al Horford and those guys in Florida. It has to be like almost like a recruiting class like that decides to commit there for, you know, like 2 years or something, and make noise.
They're gonna have to commit for a while because again, you got 5 elite players going to a small school like that. That league is going to get destroyed. They're winning every game by 40.
Right.
And where's the competition? Like from a scouting standpoint, it's almost a waste of time to even scout, go and watch them play, because it's just going to be a highlight reel after highlight reel every possession. Because again, the talent level, you're playing in a league with has 2, maybe 3 chip players.
But I think I kind of understand where Calvin's coming from on the other side of the fence, though. With the when certain players are at a certain level coming out of high school, they already know what they're about. So that year where they're not allowed to come to the NBA, it's almost like it's just something for them to do. But they pretty much already know. If a kid's coming out and he's 6'11", and he's like an Embiid, it almost doesn't matter in a sense what he does for that year. You know, as long as he doesn't blow a knee or something like that, they know from he graduated high school, some of these guys anyways, like where they're headed. So as a scout, I know this kid is coming to the NBA. Somebody doesn't pick him. When my turn comes to draft, whether I'm 1, 4, whatever, I'm not missing out on this 6'11 stud.
Well, let me throw a curveball. What if they do commit to a Howard, the number one player? Like, let's say Ben Simmons did commit to Howard. Remember a couple of times in LSU, people were judging his work ethic and how hard he played and so forth.
Right.
He went to Howard, and he averaged 12 points.
Well, then he would have got killed if he went to like a higher school.
Yeah, but if he went to a higher school and averaged 10 points, like a Duke, it's still Duke.
Right.
They're still playing ACC talent.
But he bought the media now to Howard, which wouldn't be there the year before.
No, but in regards, not this is not about benefiting Howard. It's about benefiting the kid. So, as a coach or as a parent, you got to. It's almost you're trusting the kid's talent. That he's gonna make good, and he's gonna destroy the competition there. But there is a possibility that he looks like crap.
Yeah, it's a risk. It's a risk,
especially because he's not playing with other great players, right? And say he only puts 14, 12 points, now his stock just plummets. So he
gets a risk,
a possible top 10 player to second round, right?
Mm-hmm.
Lots of money.
You know, I go back to something you said earlier about like the shoe companies, like the with the Nike and the Adidas and whatnot. And I put him in the same hat with the NCAA and the teams, because it's all one big brotherhood. Like, you know, this the shoe companies kind of try to steer kids a certain way and whatnot. What's sad about this whole thing is the players have the full control.
Yeah,
they control everything, but they're fooled. It's like the system is backwards. It's basically like the employees. Without your employees, you don't have a business. Yet your employees are so, their heads are so in the fog that they'll never get it and realize that. As soon as these young men and women realize that, the NCAA system has to crumble. But it'll never crumble as long as, you know, teams like Duke, you know, North Carolina. Kids feel like, I have to go to these big schools to make it. If they decide one day to shake up the system, it's a risk they're taking, but at some point you hope this system gets torn up. Because, like, for example, how the kids aren't getting paid. We hear about that every year for like the last 20-something years, but every year you're still seeing, you know, Coach K, you're still seeing, like, Boeheim, all of them still making major figures. And the years goes past. This has been discussed for the last 20-something years. And they're still basically making major money while some of these kids graduate and go back into projects, struggling to find a job. But they don't realize they are in control of this flawed system. And I just hope one day they get it and just boycott the whole thing if need be. Demand pay, you know, like the system, the NCAA system, I think it's a joke. And part of it being a joke is the players don't understand that they are in charge. It's not the coaches. It's not the shoe companies. They are in charge.
Just before we jump into that point, so I'll ask both of you guys a question. Do you think it's just generally too much pressure for a blue chipper player to follow in the footsteps of somebody like Earl the Pearl Monroe, being a Hall of Famer type coming from a HBCU? Now, to credit Monroe, or not to credit, but just to shine a light on the Monroe situation, I mean, that was back in the 60s.
And, I'm about to say that.
Yeah, and a lot of those, it was a different time where most of the major schools were still segregated in a lot of ways, if not the school, mm-hmm. then the surrounding community or the state itself. So they didn't have the pressure to go to like a Duke or Kentucky because that just option just wasn't available. But is it too much pressure for somebody to be that trailblazer in a sense?
I don't want to use the word too much pressure, because, you know, then you're kind of saying, you know, it can't be done or they shouldn't do it. But it's the words that's like, you have to. Those words like you have to, it's what kids follow nowadays. It's like, in order to be seen, you have to play like AAU. You have to do this and that with certain shoe companies. You have to go to certain universities. So the media, as well as coaches and whatnot, in these kids' ears, you're planting a seed that the only way you can make it is you have to take this avenue. And again, like I said earlier, the avenue that they're taking is the same avenue we've been complaining about for the last 20-something years. It's just gotten even bigger now. The shoe companies are making more money. The coaches, the schools are making more money. But the players now, from they're in high school, they're told you have to take this avenue. So by telling them that, nothing changes. And a kid right now at 10 years old, he's going to take the same avenue that the guy 10 years ago took. So those words, you have to. In order to make it, you have to. This is the trail you have to take. I think that's the problem. Somebody has to go against the grain sooner or later and try to shake up that tree.
Well, the thing is, from these kids are 10, 12 years old playing AAU, they're from the AAU coaches to parents to family, Everything is targeting the big AU teams that have the sneaker deals.
Right.
Number one,
right.
Who are traveling to these big tournaments, who are playing in the is it EYBL, the Nike League, and the Adidas League, and the Under Armour League. Those are the teams these kids want to play in. So from young, they're already the
recruiting.
Yeah, from the recruiting, but from the sneaker standpoint, it's already big. I got to play in the EYBL, the Nike League. Right, I got to play in the Under Armour League. I got to play because that's all the big recruiting is at. That's where the coaches are going to be. So you start there, and then right now at this time of age, from social media, YouTube, so forth, cable, you're seeing all the. I'm looking at a Duke game right now, right? Mm-hmm. The Duke Florida is on right now.
Right.
So these are the games these kids are seeing. They're seeing the success stories of these. The starting from the starting five from Kentucky or Duke, they're pretty much guaranteed to see the NBA court at some point in the time.
Right.
Right. So these are what these kids aspiring to be. They just want to follow that same path as the 2017 class. So until you see guys coming off from Howard, one or two guys coming off from Howard that's actually making the league and making noise in the league, not just sitting on some bench, right? Then you might start attracting people. You might start attracting some talent there, but it's hard to get an NBA talent from a two-star player. You know, it's very hard.
No.
Yeah, they don't get the media coverage, you know, either. So even the young men and women, like the young men and women from their area, from the D.C. Virginia area, you know, they're going to the other schools. They're not going to the black schools, and there's so much talent that comes out of that area. You know, it's just weird sometimes when you think about it. So much talent coming out of that area, and they never support the black schools. Like, you want the easier path to the NBA and to the riches, but you just hope that at some point it crumbles.
To me, if you recruit 3-star players, 4-star players, like 3 to 4-star players, your program will start getting better. Slowly but surely, it'll start getting better.
But can you?
These players will stay 4 years. So by the time they're seniors, a lot of the times these 3-star players are being overlooked because they're playing in a small town or they weren't on the right AAU team and so forth. But by the time they put in 2-3 years of work in college, their game is they've gotten stronger. They're facing better talent. They're ready to go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you find that three-star guy, by the time he's his fourth year in college, he can possibly be, you know, first-round recruit in an NBA. But you got to start by, I think, recruiting those type of players, not just the 2-star players. You're going after the 3-4 players. And maybe that's something about recruiting, like how Marist did back in my day when they recruited all of us from abroad.
Right,
right. Maybe it's easier to take it, to go recruit a kid from France. As much as the internet is prominent there as well, and these kids also want to play for Kentucky and Duke, you're more likely to get a stud player from abroad as opposed to getting one from Canada or the U.S. Now.
Well, obviously, we've seen in the last few years that we've known this for years that the system, the NCAA system, the model that they have is broken. I think it's broken just because it's funny. Last weekend or a couple weekends ago, I was watching NCAA football game, Michigan and Ohio State, and I'm watching this game, and there's about 80,000 people in the stands. This game is packed. Obviously, there's big stakes involved and everything else, but I'm looking at all those fans in the crowd, the millions and billions of dollars is being generated for these programs. And technically, again, you know, I'm using air quotes here, but, you know, the students here are not getting a dime of that, right? And then when you look at the last 10 years, when I'm just focusing on the back to basketball for a second, when you look at Brandon Jennings, who left to go to China, you know, Emmanuel Mudiay, who went to do the same thing, Ben Simmons, I think, with this documentary, I think he kind of really shines more light on the fact that the system is broken. I mean, even Thon Maker, you know, he found a loophole and now he's playing for the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know where he was thinking of going last year, but I mean, he found a loophole and skipped through that. So I wonder now if more high schoolers are going to try to follow in that loophole as well, to try to, you know, forego going to school for 1 year. Because if you're the next LeBron James, that type of thing, like going to Duke or Kentucky, I don't want to say this doesn't help you, but I mean, you don't want to be there. You know what I mean? Like, and clearly you're not, unless you really want to get that diploma, you're not looking to, you know what your profession is going to be. Like right out of high school, you know, you're going to make millions of dollars playing this game and not sitting in a marketing class or working on thesis statements and different things. Right. So for that, I'm like, what needs to change basically for this one and done system to change? Do you think it's sharing in the revenue and the profits for these players? Like does a union have to now be involved, like what Northwestern did, I think 2 years ago with their football program? Like does a union need to be formed for these guys to start seeing some of this money?
Yes, definitely. Any business that's out there, if you want to force changes, you have to hit them in the pocketbook. Unless you're hitting them in the pocketbooks, it doesn't mean a thing. So unless these guys come together, form a union, even boycott, every freshman coming in, boycott from football to basketball to hockey, boycott for that year, demand with a union, demand some kind of fee in order to come in and play NCAA. Hit them in the pocketbooks. Again, the students are the ones that's in charge. Without them, you have nothing. If they were to do something like that, I say within a year, they start taking care of these players financially. But until they start losing money, serious money, the game goes on. Because like I said, every year we discuss this, and I still see Coach K and player and coaches like that, especially some of these football coaches, still on the sideline making money. You don't hear them complaining. I don't see them like parading and going to the NCAA office saying like, this is wrong what we're doing. You know, we have to start paying the coaches. I mean, the players. You don't see that. So as long as the players keep coming, think about this. As long as the players keep coming, why should I change the system? I'm a businessman. As long as my pockets are being lined and I'm able to live the life that I'm living, why would I change it? You guys have been complaining for over 20 years now, at least, and yet I'm still making millions. So until you start taking money out my pocket, this does not change. You understand what I mean? So to me, and again, the students are in charge, the players are in charge, and until they do something, I don't see the need why the NCAA should change. It's business. Do I think what they're doing is wrong? Hell yeah. You know, do I think the players need to be paid? Definitely. But just on the business side, that's not how business works. Yeah. As long as I'm making money, I'm not supposed to. Nowhere in business it says I should have a heart.
I like the idea of the kids going away and for a year and getting paid. And getting that grown man experience, not only on the ball court playing against men, but
just life, just
life skills, right? I love that.
And of course, this is pertaining to just the blue chippers, because not every obviously is not going to be able to do this, but yeah.
And I think if like say the top 10 blue chippers do that, then maybe be forced to change.
But you're just talking basketball. Remember, the powerhouse is football.
It's football, yeah.
So what does the football players do?
Yeah, because I mean, the rule that they have in place is they
for the CFL? They
but I think the ruling is for football is you can't enter the draft until I think it's at least 3 years out of high school.
Yeah, I think
right.
Three,
so
yeah.
And I think that's across the board. I think that's even with CFL.
Even
with
CFL, I know.
Yeah. So even if Bo Jackson was coming out of high school, he can't play for the Red Blacks.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing. And then there's different loopholes with basketball now, but you're right. But, you know, like the football is where all the money is being generated for college sports, where the most of it, you know, like the big share of it is being generated from that.
A good thing for them to try is to boycott. Because I kind of get the football side, because when you're coming in at 18, you're not ready to take grown man hits.
No, you ain't ready. You ain't ready for for J.J. Watt or Ray Lewis type or the guys on Seattle to take your legs out, you know, from 18 years old.
Some are, but the majority, you're not ready for those kind of hits. So I get it. So now force the card that, okay, if I'm going to be there for 2 to 3 years, pay me or I don't show up. And again, until you do that, if I'm the coach or a dean or I'm in charge of the NCAA, I sit in my chair and I laugh. I go, they have to come to me. They can complain all they want. They have to come here, especially the football players. Where are they going to go? Europe? They have to come here. The basketball players might be able to escape, you know, for a year. But the big money, the football players, well, what are you going to do? You're going to complain, but I know where you're coming. In July, when we open camps, or June or whenever they open, I know you're going to be on campus. And Dan, there is the problem. You know, we complain, but every year, everybody shows up to campus. So I know I'm going to make my money. So why change?
Yeah. So I think with football, a definite union would have to be formed in that sense. What would you even pay like a player, like in terms of revenue? Like, what do you form like a partnership?
I've always said when I was a senior, and this was like back in 1990, I did an interview with a sports show in New York, and I brought that up about getting paid as an athlete. I can run my mouth at the time because that season was over, and and that's the honest truth.
You're a senior, so you didn't care.
Yeah, and I was a senior, so I wasn't coming back. I was done, right? And season was done. We played our last game was like 3 weeks after season was done. So they asked me about that, and I was like, yeah, we should be getting paid. And my whole thing was they should take a percentage of revenue earned from whatever the sport be, and just whether it be like, say, 10% or just give that 10% to the players on that team, right? Wow. And you just everybody just divided up equally amongst the players, and it's held in an escrow fund until that player graduates, and then the money you've earned for that 2 years, if you leave early, you get that 2 years after you leave that school, whether you graduate or you just decide to leave or you transfer, whatever, you still get that earning. Right, because that's yours. So here's a question, because this is where it always gets complicated with this. Some schools would say, well, I'm Kentucky, so why should I be, making the same? I play for Kentucky, so why should I be making the same amount as a guy that plays for like Howard University?
Well, no, but you're not going to make the same amount because you're making Kentucky's revenue is totally different than the Howard revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So you're getting 10% of the Kentucky revenue. That's the team, right? So it's a 10 that whatever that benchmark is, it's goes across the board.
But don't they all get something also out of the tournament?
Yeah.
So whatever the tournament money, again, that's all revenue made from that particular team. You know, so you get that 10% or 5%, whatever the benchmark is, and that goes across the board.
No, but what I'm saying is the NCAA office makes money off the tournament, and then so they would have to trickle that money down to the schools now. Yeah, you understand what I mean? And that's 300 and something schools.
Yeah, but every round of the tournament, these schools are getting paid.
No, I'm not talking about the school that's in the tournament.
You're just talking about the organization as a whole.
Yeah, because the NCAA is making so much money. I'm not talking about the guys that's in the tournament. I'm talking about my team didn't make the tournament, but my school's getting a piece of that tournament also.
Yeah.
So you can't have everything, bro.
You can try.
No, it's funny. In my head, I just picture the board of the NCAA, the guys that are like on top. Basically, you know, before they decided to do that, they decided to be like the Joker instead, and just remember in the Dark Knight where they light half of the money and just let it burn to the ground first before they split the profit, you know. But it's funny. I just think it needs to change. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, that was the point of the podcast today. Just bringing up ideas with just seeing how HBCUs can benefit or start to get a resurgence there. But then on top of that, just with the whole one and done thing, I've always thought that in a sense that I never had an issue with players, you know, leaving, going from high school. You know, I think there should be some sort of parameters involved. Maybe you don't penalize them if they decide to declare to go pro and say if maybe they don't make the first round, you still give them the option to go to college. But I think once you go to college, maybe there's the option that you maybe have to stay 2 years.
Yeah, but I agree with what Curtis said, though. I love it when the guys go off to Europe, the basketball players. It's a shame, like, you know, the guys who, like, football and whatnot, but the basketball players, I love it. Stick it to them, man. If I have a kid, and this kid's a stud, and I know he's an NBA player. I mean, teams in the NBA is watching him, and they want him bad. I would tell my kid, head off to Europe for a year.
Yeah.
You know, because again, and you guys have heard this said before. If I can go and fight in a war at 18, why can't I go earn a living for my family? And instead, I'm coming from the project, let's say. My family's struggling. I go to the NCAA for a year, tear apart my knees, and I don't see nothing. I might as well go to Europe and take that chance for a year. If I tear apart my knees, you know, who knows? I might end up with $500,000, whatever. Man. You know, depending on the country I go to. But instead, I'm going to the NCAA. I tear apart my knee. I don't make it to the pros. And for what? But I could have gone and fought in the military. It makes no sense.
I've always said I think, you know, they should let high school players have the option of going straight to the pros if they want. Because I've always said that the basketball is a livelihood. And if a kid can go and work for Microsoft right out of high school, everybody will applaud him.
Yeah.
So it's the same difference to me.
Especially right? When he can make seven figures.
Yeah, and the money these kids can make right off the jump is not Microsoft money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot more. But I always argue the point that if a kid goes to Microsoft right out of high school, everybody says he's a genius. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is their livelihood. This is what they've grown up. This is what they've trained their body for. And in fact, I'll also argue that their product, their bodies, their moneymaker has a shelf life, shorter shelf life, right? As opposed to somebody who's using their, you know, their brains, an engineer or computer guy. They're using their brains. So you're using your body. You got a shorter shelf life. You may as well exploit it as much as you can.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cause, so. And I think that's a great misnomer just with preps to pro players. I mean, there were some failures, and, you know, you hear some of the stories, like the sob stories with some of these kids that, you know, that basically got mismanaged wrong and got, you know, like the poor information and declared and ended up not going anywhere, and then they lost their eligibility, and then just,
but that's part of life, though, right?
And that's the part of it. This is the decision that they make. But when you look at some of the names that left, I mean, there's, I would say it's like a 50-50 split almost. It's like there's more success stories, and not every high school player that went straight to the pros was a superstar, obviously, but there's a lot more successes than people realize. Like guys like Al Harrington, Darius Miles. Look at Tyson Chandler. You know, Eddie Curry. Yeah, you could rip Eddie Curry and say, hey, he was a bust or whatever. Maybe he should have gone to school. And yeah, maybe he should have. But that guy, you know, made close to $100 million during that time too, coming from high school. I mean, you look
Monte
at guys.
Monte Ellis.
Yeah, Monte Ellis. You know, well, he was. I mean, he was even a more riskier guy because he got drafted in the second round.
J.R. Smith,
you know, you got, I mean, go down the list, and I'm not talking like the McGrady's and the Kobe's and the LeBrons. Yeah. I mean,
Lou Williams.
Yeah, Lou Williams, another one, Rashard Lewis, you know, like you have a bunch of guys that, you know, that served out like a serviceable career in the pros coming from there. So it didn't hurt them. You know what I mean? It definitely didn't hurt them coming out. Yeah. So to me, I'm like, I don't think it's as dire as people make it out to be. I just think that there's got to be something in place that if, say, they don't get promised to be drafted in the first round, then maybe, you know, they can still have the eligibility to go to college.
But put yourself in these guys' minds at the same time, these young men. Imagine how hard that is. You're a stud, you know, you're an NBA player, you know, like hands down, and you got to go sit on a campus for a year. Your school may not be your thing. And you got to sit in a campus for a year, and you have to show up to classes at least for the first semester to be able to finish the year.
Well, that's what Ben Simmons went through, right?
Yeah, that's got to be hard, man.
That's what he went through, because clearly, I mean, again, all the big schools, he went to LSU. LSU's not, you know, they haven't been big on basketball since Shaq was there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for him, that was just, I think he just went there because he had a relative that either that worked for the free LSU.
Well, no, the coach. I think the coach knew his father or something like that.
It was something like that. So basically he just went there. So really, like, he didn't give a shit about going to Duke or Kentucky or one of these schools. He just went there because he had to. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He had to. You know what I mean? So that's the crazy part. That's why I said it's flawed. And
now imagine the coach yells at you in practice and the coach starts like sticking into you. Like, Calvin, what the F are you doing, this and that? Could you imagine? What's holding you together? You don't want to be there. You shouldn't be there. And now a coach is talking down to you?
The system has definitely got to change. You know what I mean? And I think there's certain parameters and definitely revenue sharing has to be involved in this process going forward, I believe. But closing thoughts. Like, what are you guys' closing thoughts just in general here?
When it comes to the black colleges, black universities, you know, I would love to see them get better talent. You know, I think they deserve it.
Yeah.
I think they have to start with, again, the recruiting process. Try to get some three-star players, you know, some players that can make some noise in a couple of years. With that being said, you're still going to need to attract them to your campus, and I think you're going to need to spend some money at some point on a decent coach.
Yeah.
Convince an ex-NBA guy to come and lead the helm. That can help you recruit players. And then once you start building the program after 3-4 years, now you might get some four-star guys. And maybe you might get, in like 5-6 years, maybe you might get that blue-chip guy, you know, that five-star player. Yeah, I think it's a slow build, but I think it's possible. But to look at getting five-star guys from jump, I think that's asking way too much. There's too much outside factors there.
Well, it starts with a dream, right?
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And in regards to the NBA, and the one-and-done guys and high school guys, I truly believe that I think it's BS that high school players aren't allowed to that option to go straight to the pros, right? You know, hockey, baseball, it works over there, right? Soccer,
tennis,
it works in those sports.
Tennis, golf,
right? Tennis, golf, whatever. Nobody's yelling that. What was the Toronto kid here? The tennis kid from Toronto?
Rownage.
Rownage. Yeah. I don't think Rownage went to UFT. You know, nobody's saying anything. The kid's making millions right now.
Yeah,
playing his sport.
Mm-hmm.
Playing his sport. Nobody's questioning whether or not he can do it or he's making the right decisions. He's playing his sport and making money at it. Right. So it's good for one sort of fourth community, but it's not good for the next. That's to me ridiculous.
In my closing, I would say like I said earlier, I wish and I hope to see the players like understand that they're the ones in charge, and it's not their coach, it's not the dean, it's not the NCAA president, and they're the ones in charge. You know, without the employees, you don't have a business. I hope they wake up one day and get a union and boycott the NCAA. The freshmen's coming in because every year that they don't do it, you think about it, every 4 years that we discuss this, that's another class that came through and basically got pimped out. Every 4 years. So in four years from now, whoever was a freshman this year, he'll graduate, and they made all that money off him, especially if he's a football player, you know, playing for like the Alabamas of the world. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think until they boycott, I just don't see the need for the NCAA, which is a business. I don't see the need for them to change because they're continuously making money. So until they get hit in the pocketbooks, seriously in the pockets, I don't see it changing. So I'm hoping I live to see it. and we could stop having this conversation. You know, it'll be a great day. But I think the players once again have to realize that they're the ones in charge. It's not their coach, their dean, you know, the shoe companies. You know, they're the ones in charge. Without them, this train does not move.
Yeah, no doubt. And just in closing, yeah, I just think another part of it is what we mentioned before, or what I mentioned before too, is just that it all starts with coaching, like getting the right coach to come in there. And I think just following, because I always look at that Gonzaga mold, because they started off as a small school that just built and built and built, and now, you know, they're setting players regularly to the NBA, even though they're not in a powerhouse conference. So mm-hmm. I think somebody has to take that mold, because I mean, that conference, the conference that they're in, it didn't start off, you know, having a whole bunch of players. Now you're seeing like St. Mary's and Pepperdine, different schools and stuff, Santa Clara and stuff. Like now they're becoming better, but because they're trying to keep up with the Gonzaga. So I think somebody has to be the trailblazer to start that process. And I think in turn, that's what's going to help the conference start to get better, because they're going to, you know, try to keep up with, you know, like say Howard takes that mantle, they're going to try to keep up with them now, you know? So I think I want to see that happen. I would love to see some school or some coach, or, you know, an assortment of blue chip players, you know, or as Curtis alluded to, like getting like 3 and 4 star recruits every, you know, like every year for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years. To combine and somebody take that mantle to be a trailblazer, to see if this can change or something like this. Because as far as the players are concerned, again, like, you're not getting any money out of this. How do you affect the structure of it? You know, and that's the way I see it. You know, and there's so much billions of dollars being made off of these kids' backs. It would be nice to see if they can kind of shake up the structure.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's ridiculous.
You know, so with that said, brothers, thank you very much. Big Brother Kurt, DJ Chris Nice, thank you guys for coming on the podcast today.
No, thank you, man. Pleasure. Thank you. It's definitely a pleasure. Good work.
Sorry, what's that?
Hey, keep it up. Keep up the good work.
Yeah, thank you, bro. Thank you, man. All right. And definitely have you guys back once again, for sure.
All right. Yeah, no doubt.
All right.
Peace.
Thank you all for tuning in to the AV podcast today. And special thanks to Big Brother Curtis and DJ Chris Nice for having the conversation with me. I think it's needed to explore the options of the student athlete more often, especially with pertaining to college basketball. Plus, to inquire more about the historical black colleges and universities, and just to see how they can start being part of the process as well. To get your podcast and blog fix, make sure you subscribe to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. And special thanks once again, as always, for tuning in. For DJ Chris Nice and Big Brother Curtis, this is Cal C. And this is the AV Podcast on South Shore AV Radio. Until the next podcast, folks. Peace.